Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You are now listening live to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing live. It is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539 to press the one key, to get on cue, and to be able to talk in live on the show. We have a lot of topics to go through today on this show. But before we get right into it, I'm going to go through a couple of commercials here. And we will be talking about what happened with these set of fights that happened over the weekend. So we will get into that here in a bit. You're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston will have the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Just getting into, you know, what happened over the course of the weekend. We had fights on Spike TV on Friday night. We had something on HBO Boxing or Sky Sports pay-per-view on Saturday afternoon, and then we had a main event on HBO Sports on Saturday night, and we had a, you know, very good set of fights that happened over the course of the weekend, and we pretty much, you know, we're going to get right into it as we had like a very good main event that was at the O2 Arena last night, as Gennady Golovkin defended the WBC, IBF, and IBO middleweight championship fights, middleweight championship belts against Kell Brook. Kell Brook came in there 36-0, was the reigning IBF welterweight champion, and came in there, you know, pretty much going from welterweight to middleweight. Kell Brook was able to make it within the 160-pound limit in the weigh-in, and also, you know, was able to fall within the rehydration agreement within 10 pounds, whatever it is, and stepped into the ring there against Gennady Golovkin. And, you know, Golovkin, of course, is a career middleweight, you know, undefeated there with, you know, 35 wins, no losses, coming into the ring with the WBC, IBF, and IBO middleweight belts. And, of course, had the impressive knockout record there, you know, 36 wins with 33 knockouts going up there against Kell Brook. And, you know, into the fight, nobody, you know, there wasn't that many people that thought that Kell Brook really had a shot in this matchup, with it being his first fight at middleweight, going up against the a unified middleweight champion in Gennady Golovkin. Seemed like it was going to be a blowout win for Golovkin. But these first, you know, few rounds seemed like it was a fairly good back and forth fight. Kell Brook was able to, you know, step in the ring or get in the ring there and give Golovkin a fight. He looked like he was, you know, there moving around the ring a little bit, getting Golovkin, trying to see if Golovkin was going to try to basically not be as focused as, you know, he usually is. You know, Gennady Golovkin had like a reach advantage, but it was only a 1-inch reach advantage. So it wasn't like something that, you know, Golovkin could step into the ring and use an effective jab and, you know, have Kell Brook, you know, start reaching for air a lot. Actually, it was the opposite on multiple occasions, and seemed like Kell Brook was able to stick or stay in the pocket a few times and was able to effectively counter Gennady Golovkin with his right hand, and he was scoring, you know, multiple times with that right hand, and the uppercut seemed to affect Golovkin in between, I would say, the second and fourth rounds. The issue that Kell Brook was having was that he just couldn't stay mobile. And once he got into the ropes, that's when he really got into the most trouble. That's when Gennady Golovkin was able to, you know, work the body and, you know, get a couple of good shots to the head there for form. And, you know, within the fifth round, I mean, even though Kell Brook was looking like he was taking the shots from Gennady Golovkin, it seemed like he had damage to his eye. And with that being known by the corner of Kell Brook, they ended up stopping the fight within round five. So that led to the technical knockout victory for Gennady Golovkin, for him to move to 36 wins with 33rd knockout of his career, and him retaining those middleweight title belts that were on the line there in the O2 arena. And this, I mean, he moves on retaining the championship while Kell Brook suffers his first loss. And, you know, while I pretty much, you know, quickly analyzed the fight here between Gennady Golovkin and Kell Brook, overall, I mean, I thought that Kell Brook was going to be basically walked over within the, you know, next few, you know, the first three rounds or so. I ain't really give him more than three rounds in this particular fight. I mean, this is a guy that has been a career welterweight. And when he approached the fight, getting really big there, being at 176 pounds, you know, 30 days before the weigh-in, and then coming in at 167 pounds a week before the weigh-in to try to make 160. And when you do that, you kind of, you know, you basically spend a lot of rounds, you know, spend a lot of those days training and trying to cut the weight. And you can be training in the middle of that, but you're also trying to cut weight. And if you saw there, he just wasn't able to stay mobile and stay away from Gennady Golovkin's basic attack of, you know, moving forward, straight forward, and trying to move laterally to try to cut off the ring from Kell Brook. The thing with Gennady Golovkin, though, is that he moves with his legs, but he doesn't seem like he moves with his head. And that's what, you know, where Kell Brook was able to be successful in his counterattacks, like I mentioned before, and, you know, scoring with, you know, the jabs and the other things that he had within his repertoire. And it showed that Gennady Golovkin is not necessarily a, you know, unstoppable force at middleweight. And this is something that, you know, a lot of a good number of boxing fans have seen, you know, over the course of his last few fights. To me, this kind of reminded me of the Willie Monroe fight. Willie Monroe was kind of a slickster, somebody that could move, somebody that could, you know, make adjustments on the fly that would have Gennady Golovkin reset. And, you know, when Golovkin resets, he basically has to start over. I mean, start right where he left off at. You know, his basic thing is, you know, try to cut the opponent off, get him in the corner and do some work, or try to see if his opponent will, you know, get in close with him, and then, you know, try to work the body and the head, and, you know, see if he'll be able to take Golovkin's punches in close quarters. With Kell Brook, he didn't necessarily do much of all that until, you know, rounds 4 and 5, when Golovkin was successful in getting Brook to the ropes. And when he got Brook to the ropes, that's when he was able to do a lot of damage towards Kell Brook. And so Golovkin, like I said, stays undefeated, retains all of his middleweight belts, and is looking to, you know, other particular fights in the middleweight division, which he pretty much says that, you know, he's going after all the belts in the middleweight division. And he's, you know, said that a lot. But he also said that back in April, that when the idea of Kell Brook was raised as a potential fight, that Kell Brook was too small. And you see what happened here. He got the fight between Gennady Golovkin and Kell Brook. So on the HBO telecast, after the fight, the commentators were asking if, you know, Gennady Golovkin had any plans for his next particular fight. And like I was saying, he said he was going to go after all the belts and would go after Billy Joe Saunders. But we're going to see if that's going to be the case, because I mean, we've talked about a potential fight between Gennady Golovkin and Billy Joe Saunders happening, and wasn't able to come to fruition beforehand. So now it's looking like they're trying to see if they could get things done to have the fight in December. However, there has been a announcement from the World Boxing Association. I think it's through I think it's Gilberto Ramirez. I think that's who the president of the World Boxing Association is. Although I may be mistaken in that. I'll look up where it said it at, because there we go. It's not Gilberto Ramirez. It's Gilberto Jesus Mendoza, who was the elected president of the World Boxing Association, and said that they had it in the works for the WBA to order Gennady Golovkin to defend his belt or to have his belt on the line against Daniel Jacobs. And we'll talk about Daniel Jacobs here in another segment later on, but the potential fight here between Golovkin versus Daniel Jacobs would be a very, very good matchup between two of the higher rated middleweights in the division. They pretty much have like 90 days, or I think it's not 30 days to go into negotiations to make that fight happen, or it'll go pretty much go into a purse bid, and 90 days for that particular fight to happen. So I would really like to see if, you know, Golovkin and Daniel Jacobs will be able to face each other. I mean, although, you know, Billy Joe Saunders has, you know, stepped up saying that he wants to fight Golovkin, and Chris Eubank said that he wants to fight Gennady Golovkin. Although Chris Eubank already had interest in fighting Gennady Golovkin, but the supposed fight didn't come to fruition because of Chris Eubank Sr. But it wasn't really anything going on between Gennady Golovkin and Chris Eubank Jr. I think that Eddie Hearn had this plan between Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin in place from the beginning because it's the most lucrative fight that at the time that Kell Brook could have made, you know, with anybody that's within those weight classes from 147 up into 147 up into 160. I don't think that, you know, of course, the Vargas fight for Kell Brook wouldn't have, you know, made that much money for him, even though it would have been a title unification fight at welterweight. That wouldn't have been a good fight for him to make financial-wise. The unification fight between Brook and Thurman wouldn't be all too good. And I don't think that Brook would have been able to beat Keith Thurman. And a unification fight between Kell Brook and Danny Garcia wouldn't have made much sense because Danny Garcia, I don't think is at that level to command much out of a fight between him and Kell Brook. That probably would have still been made in the O2 Arena, but it wouldn't have made as much money as a fight between Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin. So Kell Brook went the route of Amir Khan, as Amir Khan fought Canelo Alvarez on May 7th. So he basically did the same thing, ran up to middleweight to fight Gennady Golovkin and get the most money out of that deal, even though that basically cost him a broken eye socket and he has to go into surgery for it. So that puts him out of commission for a very good while there. So Kell Brook suffered the first loss of his career, has a broken eye socket to show for it, but was able to get probably his most lucrative or the most money that he's had in any fight in his career. All right, that pretty much summarizes what happened between Gennady Golovkin and Kell Brook. We're going to move on to another fight there that happened on Saturday. But if you want to get in and talk about boxing live, call in at 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right. Now, also on Saturday night, we had a super flyweight title match as Carlos Quadras defended his WBC super flyweight championship against Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, who was the WBC flyweight champion. And this is at the Forum in Inglewood, California, of course, a Great Western Forum, home of the legendary Los Angeles Lakers teams that were over in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so we have pretty much the number one guy coming out of the flyweight division going against Carlos Quadras, who, you know, according to most, was the number one guy in the super flyweight division. And this fight here was, you know, probably a fight that, you know, of course, not many casual fans would, you know, necessarily be interested in. But, you know, those that, you know, follow the sport and see that, you know, Roman Gonzalez is considered as, you know, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. Some publications had him as high as number one pound-for-pound. And he was going up against, like I said, Carlos Quadras, who, you know, while not many people may have, you know much about him, he's, you know, one of the, you know, best fighters there within that division at super flyweight, and also, you know, was undefeated, you know, up to that point, going up against Roman Gonzalez. He was at 35-0 with 27 KOs up until this fight against Chocolatito Gonzalez. And, of course, Gonzalez there was there at 45-0 with the WBC flyweight championship. Now, Carlos Quadras had the WBC super flyweight championship, you know, ever since 2014, and has defended it, you know, multiple times. Has, you know, gone up against guys like Luis Concepcion, Richie McFranum, Jose Salgado, and scored, like, you know, a couple of TKO victories and a few decisions there. He did have a technical draw against Jose Salgado back in 2014 in his first defense of the super flyweight championship, but he's, you know, moved on to win and defend those the WBC super flyweight title up into this fight here against Chocolatito Gonzalez. And Chocolatito Gonzalez had been, you know, undefeated, had a string of TKO victories, you know, from 2013 up until he fought McWilliams Arroyo back in April. And that fight in April, there was a lot of people that thought that Gonzalez would go through Arroyo and, you know, basically score a KO victory there, but Arroyo was somebody that gave him issues, so Gonzalez basically had to, you know, get a unanimous decision win. It wasn't like it was a close victory, but he scored a unanimous decision win against McWilliams Arroyo, and then went up in weight to fight Carlos Quadras for that WBC super flyweight championship. And, you know, this fight was, you know, one of those fights that was a pretty good back and forth fight between Carlos Quadras and Roman Gonzalez. And for those that hadn't seen Carlos Quadras, for this being the first time to see him in a fight against somebody that is regarded as, you know, the number one pound for pound, such as with the Transnational Boxing Rankings Board, puts Gonzalez as number one pound for pound. Quadras really, you know, really held his own, really showed why he was undefeated and the WBC super flyweight champion up to that point. Was going back and forth there with Chocolatito Gonzalez, and, you know, gave Gonzalez a very, very, very good fight. But, you know, eventually Gonzalez was able to get the better of Carlos Quadras to score the unanimous decision and get his fourth his WBC super flyweight belt, and capture a belt in four different weight classes. And he moves up to 46-0 by doing that. Like I said, it was a good fight there. Gonzalez was able to win by a unanimous decision with scorecards of 117, 111, 116, 112, and 115, 113. So, yeah, one judge had it 7-5, another judge had it 8-4, and then one judge having it 9-3. I don't know about that 9-3. You know, I don't know about that 9-3, but it was a good back and forth there. Gonzalez was fairly active with 323 punches landed out of 985 thrown, while Carlos Quadras had 258 punches landed out of 893 thrown. So as far as percentages go, it didn't seem like that much of a difference, but Gonzalez was able to land, you know, more shots in this particular fight. And it seems like Gonzalez, you know, still basically retains the spot as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport, winning that WBC Super Flyweight Championship. Before this fight, I was looking at, you know, Roman Gonzalez moving up in weight to Super Flyweight and seeing that if he was able to win this fight, then he may be able to soon go against another guy that has been placed in a few pound-for-pound rankings that is in the Super Flyweight division, and that is Noyoya Inoue, who, you know, is just 11-0 with 9 knockouts, but he is a, you know, he's a very highly regarded boxer in the sport and was already, like, put up, you know, as one of the best pound-for-pound guys with just, you know, 11 fights under his record. He had an amateur record of 75 wins and 6 losses. And he just wanted to basically take tests pretty much when he first started out in his professional career. This is, you know, pretty much a similar route that you had there with Lomachenko. Lomachenko wanted to go into his professional career with tests and not have, you know, any really easy fights to start off his career. So Noyoya, in a way, did that same thing there at Super Flyweight. And, you know, he's basically, you know, already been a champion in just a few fights. Noyoya, in a way, had the WBC light flyweight championship pretty much in his, you know, 6th professional fight. And then he defended that once and then went from light flyweight to super flyweight in his next fight for the WBO super flyweight championship and won that. So he would be a very good matchup for Roman Gonzalez to see if he's, you know, able to, you know, defend that version of the super flyweight championship and have a unification match between those two. I think that may happen early 2017. So look towards that to happen. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez and Noyoya Inoue in 2017 to be one of the high-profile matches within the sport to start off the year. But in the meantime, Chocolatito Gonzalez will hold the WBC belt while Noyoya Inoue, who won actually a week ago by KO over in Kanagawa, Japan. I expect those two to clash in the near future as one of the more high-profile fights in the sport for 2017. All right, we have like a good 25 minutes here on the live portion of the show. Want to get in the talk boxing line is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, we're, you know, continuing into the showcase matches that happened over the course of the weekend, as you also had a event that was on Spike TV on Friday, as we had the WBA regular middleweight champion Daniel Jacobs going up in a rematch against Sergio Mora. And, you know, you had Daniel Jacobs there, of course, the WBA regular middleweight champion, who scored a victory over Sergio Mora. That was last year over in the Barclays Center, as, you know, they were able to go back and forth in that fight on August 1st, as Daniel Jacobs scored the knockdown first, and Sergio Mora was able to come back and score a knockdown response. And then later on, Daniel Jacobs had the knockdown, but Mora couldn't really get up because he had an injured right ankle there. So Daniel Jacobs had that TKO victory on August 1st of last year in two rounds. And so, you know, while Sergio Mora was basically getting healed from that injury, he had a phone call that, you know, the first fight that he would have once he got back was a rematch against Daniel Jacobs. And so basically came 13 months after their first fight. This fight here was in Reading, Pennsylvania. And to me, it was something, it was about Daniel Jacobs basically seeing if he could make a statement that, you know, Sergio Mora really couldn't be in the same ring with him. And, you know, it took a little while for, you know, it took a little while for Jacobs to basically get back into the, you know, into the groove against Sergio Mora. But, I mean, Sergio Mora really didn't, you know, give Daniel Jacobs much of an issue as far as, like, his offense was concerned. But as far as, like, his defense, he looked like he was able to be a lot more mobile, moved his head, moved his body a lot, tried to, you know, duck and dodge and slip a good number of Daniel Jacobs' punches, especially within the first few rounds of those. But then, you know, Daniel Jacobs was able to catch up to Sergio Mora, and then he scored one knockdown in round four, which Mora was able to get up from, and then scored another knockdown in round five. And with the other rounds coming through, Daniel Jacobs still was able to, you know, focus and be in there up until round seven. And then, you know, by the time round seven came about, Daniel Jacobs scored another big knockdown on Sergio Mora, and, you know, the referee basically called a halt to that after the third knockdown in round seven, and he was able to score the TKO win in 208 and 208 at round seven to retain the WBA regular middleweight championship. So Daniel Jacobs, you know, is still there with only that one loss to Dmitry Pirog, and has 32 wins with 29 knockouts. We are here live, and we have a caller here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady. How you doing, man?
Hey, brother Mike. What's going on?
Not much, not much. Just driving, figured I'd call into the show this week.
All right, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah, just in this segment here, was just going over the rematch between Daniel Jacobs and Sergio Mora, and basically saying that, Daniel Jacobs just had to prove that Sergio Moore really didn't have much of a chance to beat him. And, you know, while he, you know, seemed like he had a few little issues in the first few rounds against Sergio Moore, he was able to get to him by round four. And then after round four, it was pretty much all Daniel Jacobs.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I'm glad that he actually had this fight because, you know, even the Peter Quillin fight, it made me wonder, like, was Daniel Jacobs getting lucky? Was it like luck with him, like, hitting these people? And, you know, could he actually dominate the guy? Could he figure him out and neutralize what the guy had or whatever? And that's pretty much what he did to Sergio Moore. He neutralized what he had, and then at some point he demoralized him to the point where I felt like Sergio Moore kind of got gun-shy at some point. Yeah, so, but, I mean, he won. He kept hitting him some decent shots and ended up knocking him out, so, or stopping him. So, yeah, I thought it was a good fight for Daniel Jacobs, and he postured as if he actually wanted to fight Golovkin, so that's exciting if that's really true, if he really wanted to fight Golovkin. I mean, Golovkin definitely looked more vulnerable, so that's positive they actually fight from coming from this.
Yeah, that was the thing there that, you know, Daniel Jacobs has pretty much, you know, said that he's, you know, open to fighting Gennady Golovkin and has, you know, said that multiple times. Like I said in one previous portion of the show, that the WBA has pretty much put in the order that the that Daniel Jacobs and Gennady Golovkin, their teams have to basically negotiate to have a fight take place within 30 days, have a deal done. And if they don't have a deal done, then it'll pretty much go to purse bid. So I'm waiting to see if that's going to actually happen. And if it does, then I'd like to see it actually go to purse bid, because if it goes to purse bid, then I don't see, I don't see Tom Loeffler winning that. I think that, you know, whoever Daniel Jacobs' promoter, you know, is backed by, he's probably going to have, you know, a couple of dollars sent over his way just so they could win that purse bid and have Gennady Golovkin fight under Premier Boxing Champions.
Yeah, which would
so
be
what
good.
You think about
I mean,
that?
That'll be a very high viewability if they do fight under the PBC like brand, and then Golovkin can actually have a claim to fame for actually, you know, bringing in people, because I imagine the viewership would be pretty high with the PBC. But yeah, you're right. It would make sense that the PBC or, you know, Jacobs promoters would have the better leverage as far as the first bid and, you know, making things go their way.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, they would probably try to do, but I mean, I don't know if it's like something that they'll be all into, but I was just, you know, putting that as a potential idea for
and
Daniel
so
Jacobs.
With purse bid, doesn't like the champion get 80% of the purse or something like that? It's something like that, right?
I'm not necessarily sure how it's set, because I've seen it be like different percentages. Like, you know, for example, the purse bid with Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin. I think Deontay Wilder like was gonna get like 70% of the purse, but when they were talking about a potential fight between Golovkin and Canelo, they were talking about Canelo only getting 55%.
Oh, okay. Which that's kind of crazy, though.
Yeah, it would. And that was my thing, because when they were doing the negotiations between Canelo and Golovkin, that,
oh, but
you
Canelo,
know, Golovkin would... would get that much of a purse when, you know, Golovkin really didn't have much of anything to stand on at that point.
Did Canelo still have a belt at that point? Have a middleweight belt
at that
point? Oh, okay.
Yeah, he still had that WBC middleweight championship. That was, you know, what the WBC tried to order was, you know, the fight between those two. But, you know, Canelo voluntarily, like, gave up that WBC belt.
Yeah.
You know, so, that was my thing on that. So I have to see how, you know, that's going to turn out if Daniel Jacobs is able to get a potential fight between Gennady Golovkin before the end of the year, even though, like, Golovkin may be more interested in trying to fight Billy Joe Saunders. But also in that particular fight card, there was a lightweight championship on the line as Richard Comey went up against Robert Easter Jr. And then with Robert Easter Jr. and Richard Comey, they fought for the vacant IBF lightweight championship as it was basically vacated and there was no number one or number two contender. And that actually ended up being a very good fight between those two. Robert Easter Jr. seemed like he had like the upper hand, you know, for the early portions of the fight. And then he basically got hit in round eight, caught him a little bit off balance. He had his hand go down and his glove, I guess it grazed the canvas, so it got called as a knockdown. And then it looked like ever since like round eight into round 12, those guys basically went at it and they were like throwing the hardest shots and the biggest shots at each other, but neither one of them would go down. And especially like early in that round 12, it seemed like Richard Comey's knees buckled and he like kneeled down like real, real, real low. And it almost seemed like he was going to be knocked down, but he was able to stay up still. And Robert Easter Jr. was trying to, you know, see if he could score that knockdown. But a lot of times when Comey was there on the ropes, it seemed like Robert Easter Jr. went closer and closer instead of using his reach to try to, you know, set up a jab and then hit him with a big shot. But he just, you know, wanted to get in close. So he wasn't able to score that knockdown. And it went to the scorecards, and you had a split decision with Robert Easter Jr. basically getting a split decision victory to stay undefeated and get that IBF lightweight title belt. So he stays undefeated, and it was like a very good back and forth fight between those two. Of course, they had like a lot of support for Robert Easter Jr., including Adrian Broner, who was, you know, at ringside. Of course, you know, Easter and Broner are pretty much from the same area. They fought in the DC Armory on April 1st in that card with, you know, Broner beating Ashley Theophane in the main event. But Robert Easter Jr. gets that major title belt in the lightweight division that's, you know, fairly deep. You know, with guys like Mikey Garcia in that division and among others. So, wondering if you were able to catch that fight and if you had thoughts on it.
Yeah, I only caught the end, like the last couple rounds where it seemed to be back and forth, but I didn't really get a great glimpse of it because I was like in the middle of doing something when I was watching the fight. So, I don't have a strong opinion on it. I have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, go back and watch that fight because that was a very good back and forth fight there. you know, along with the one that was on Saturday night between Carlos Quadras and Roman Tocolatito Gonzalez. Those were two fights that, you know, you would want to, you know, either see again or, you know, try to look up to try to see if you could view it for the first time. You know, so
yeah,
those
so
are good,
Gonzalez,
good fights.
Chocolatito fight, have you discussed that yet?
Yeah, yeah, I went through that, you know, real quick. I mean, I thought it was a good back-and-forth fight. I mean, it wasn't, you know, something where Gonzalez was, you know, going to blow out Carlos Quadras. Quadras is, you know, pretty much one of the best guys in that super flyweight division. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, not a lot of people view those fights that are at the lower weights. If it wasn't for, you know, Ramon Gonzalez being on HBO, you really wouldn't be hearing about, you know, most of these guys that are in these lower divisions. So to see, you know, Ramon Gonzalez go up and wait to fight Carlos Quadras, that was a big challenge for him. And Carlos Quadras was definitely game in that fight.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I think for me, it says to the boxing writers and all this stuff, before you, like, put somebody on the pedestal, just make sure they face some real contenders and then see how they fare. You know, don't just anoint somebody the best thing since sliced bread without actually, you know, getting cut first, you know? And so,
right.
You know, like, while I definitely think that Gonzalez showed me that he is a champion, I didn't score the fight per se. I didn't score it, and I didn't, you know, I can't say who I felt like won, but shit, I know a couple of them rounds, Quadras definitely seemed to be getting the best of the exchanges, especially late. He was getting the better of the exchanges, and just the demeanor of both guys, like, he didn't go hard enough in the last few rounds for me. Quadras didn't go hard enough in the last few rounds to actually pull away and you know, take any doubt and win the fight. But, you know, Chocolatito's demeanor was one, even his face looking beat up was like negative. And then just his how he was just looking, like just the demeanor, it wasn't one of like necessarily a champion per se, or that he felt he was winning. And so I'm glad he gave credit to the guy and was like, you know, he can have his rematch, and I definitely thought this was my toughest fight. But I would equate that to the awkwardness of Quadras, because, you know, he definitely was doing some things. Even with him throwing hooks, they would land. But that kind of goes to Chocolatito. It seemed like Chocolatito is there to be hit, which we saw in, you know, one or two fights ago that he was, you know, he could be hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not fighting somebody smaller than you. You're fighting somebody who can take your punches. You know, what you going to do? Like, Chocolatito's endurance definitely needs to be commended, because that guy was still throwing punches the 12th round like he was throwing the second, third round. But, yeah, I'm not sure
true.
How the scorecards were. They were close, at least, right? The scorecards were close, right?
I think the thing about that particular fight there, I think that it was a unanimous decision victory for Gonzalez, and I think they had a 9-3, 9 rounds to 3, and 8 rounds to 4, and a 7 rounds to 5 scorecard. So, like, one judge actually gave Gonzalez 9 rounds.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't see how he got 9 rounds out of that one.
Yeah, and then what's the guy name who does the commentating? Who does the
Max Kellerman
and stuff? The scoring. The old guy.
Oh, geez, Harold Letterman.
Yeah, like, I don't know, the announcers, man, they definitely can warp a fight, like stuff that, you know, was going on and in the between the exchanges. It, like, Quadras was definitely getting the better at exchanges, and then even, like, how the punches were being taken, it seemed like Chocolatito wasn't taking them punches as well. And it, like, he was getting hurt at
right.
times. And so they would just be like, oh, Chocolatito is, you know, still the man, and nobody still can hurt him and stuff. And then Quadras being there really beating the guy. And then you want people's view on actually what's going on. And this guy is winning the rounds, and you saying that Chocolatito is the man. I don't know, that just it makes me, it saddens me to hear that. They don't, like, necessarily call it how I feel it should be called, like straight down the middle.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. I mean, I think the judges should have given Carlos Quadras much more credit, you know, with his efforts. It wasn't like, you know, Gonzalez was dominating the fight. When you have something like an 8-4 score or a 9-3 score, it almost seems like Chocolatito Gonzalez dominated the fight when he really didn't. And I think, so with that being said, you know, for him to get like a 9-3 or something like that, I guess that, you know, if there was like any close rounds or anything like that, that these judges gave, you know, these judges gave the favor towards Gonzalez in most of those rounds, that would have been close.
Yeah, exactly. Which is what the announcers were doing.
Yeah. And that's the takeaway about watching fights on HBO nowadays, is that they have their fighters that they favor, and there's fighters that they are against. And, you know, this is something that was that Angel Garcia has pointed out, you know, over the past couple of years when it comes to HBO. So and it's basically continued here in this fight between Carlos Quadras and Ramon Gonzalez. And you know, while we have a few more minutes here on the live show, you saw it when they had that fight against Kell Brook against Gennady Golovkin. And so, you know, with you being on here, I went through this particular fight, you know, over the first through 30 minutes of the show. So I want to see what your synopsis was about that fight.
Yeah, the Kell Brook Golovkin. So, correct me if I'm wrong, Kell Brook's team said he broke an eye socket and they wanted to protect him. Correct. Is that correct?
Hold on, run that again.
Kell Brook's team said that Kell Brook broke his eye socket, that Golovkin broke Brook's eye socket, and that they wanted to protect him in the fight. That's why they stopped the fight. Is that correct?
Right. Right.
Okay. So I understand that. If that's true, if the little MRI that I saw of his face or x-ray that I saw of his bone in his eye socket is true, then I understand that. The actual fight, it shows us that definitely Golovkin is human. One of the announcers said this, or maybe I saw a video online, but, you know, Golovkin is not comfortable when you attack him, you know, like, he can come forward and hit you and stuff like that, but when it's the opposite, when he getting touched and he has somebody who like, okay, you hit me, but I'm going to weather this storm and I'm going to come back and hit you just as hard as you hit me, he don't like that.
Right.
So he shells up too. He shells up and he ain't throwing as much as he, you know, supposedly the dominant man of him supposed to throw. So, I mean, a lot of those rounds, like, of course, the first round or whatever, he won the first round. Second or third round, where Kell Brook was getting off them combinations and was throwing some real nice, clean punches and was landing. And you know, at some point, I felt like he hurt Golovkin. And so Golovkin got his respect, and then I guess he landed that big punch or big few punches that broke his eye socket. And then, you know, Kell Brook kept, you know, pestering with his eye or whatever. And, you know, you could visibly see that he was hurt. And so I was thinking in my mind, like, Kell Brook, stop touching your eye. I know it hurt, but stop touching it. Because, you know, that's pretty much telling Golovkin to punch him in that eye. And so, to me, he fought best after his eye was hurt. Like, after he had, you know, had his eye fractured, eye socket fracture, he fought the best because he didn't get touched until pretty much that last round. And so they saw him getting touched the last round. He was definitely hurt. Kell Brook was in that last round. And, I mean, they made the best decision for his career. But for people going forward for the what's my boy from the UK? Eubanks, for the Eubanks of the world. For the Daniel Jacobs and, you know, the guy who's saying he'll fight him, who agreed to fight him. I mean, it makes people want to fight him now. Billy Joe Saunders. It makes all these people say that, yeah, all I got to do is have some offense and I can win this. But what I do know, if there's a fighter who is comfortable in that weight and they can box, Golovkin is going to be in trouble. If there's a guy that's just not terribly smaller than him and they can take a punch and they can box too, he's going to be in trouble. He's going to really be in trouble. And it goes to the same point to say, stop crowning these people until they actually face somebody. Like, they get mad for people crowning Floyd Mayweather, but Floyd done fought a lot of people, and he made them look average. And so people hate that. Don't crown Golovkin. Don't crown Chocolatito until they actually face some people who real. And then that's when we crown them, because you sleep on the people who are actually fighting real champions like Andre Ward, and we say, oh, he's inactive, but we know his body of work. We know what he can do. Crown all these other guys, but then when they fight a small fighter who touched them and, you know, all this, all that, they don't look as stupid human as they do. So let's pause before we try to crown these guys just to sell them and boost our ratings and all this stuff. You know, that was my takeaway from both of the fights.
Yeah. And the thing with Chocolatito Gonzalez, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of reputable publications that rate him as number one pound for pound guy, but you know, we don't necessarily know who the best particular fighter is in that weight class, you know, or you know who's the best fighters that you know Gonzalez has actually faced. So it's kind of tough to actually gauge that when we haven't really seen who he's actually fought, you know. So you can't really put him, you know, up there, you know, up there as far as like number one pound for pound. Another guy that, you know, I mentioned that's at the super flyweight division, Naoya Inoue, has only fought 11 fights in his professional career. And he's been put at number 10. I mean, and this
number
is
what?
Like different than,
He's put at number what?
10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, number 10. And this is different than, you know, Vasily Lomachenko, who, you know, pretty much fought like the top guys, like, you know, like, who is it, who was the guy that he lost to?
Salido.
Yeah, Orlando Salido. Yeah. So, it's a lot different than Vasily Lomachenko, who fought the likes of Salido and, you know, other top guys that were in that division. You know, he just now in a way just fought, you know, guys that were floating around the, you know, the light flyweight division when he started his career, and then when he moved up to super flyweight. So, you know, with that being known, you can't really quickly crown him to be one of the top guys in the division like that when you have no idea who the guys are that he's fighting. And so that comes into this thing here with, you know, some of these other guys, like I said, with Gennady Golovkin. I mean, people didn't necessarily know who Willie Monroe Jr. was or Curtis Stevens was. I mean, nobody knew who the guys that Golovkin beat to get his first titles. I mean, they can't really look into who these guys are, and that's something that, you know, I might talk about, you know, after the end of the show, that, you know, there's a few people, you know, within the boxing circles online. If you check these YouTube videos that talk about Gennady Golovkin and, you know, the guys that he's fought, that you really don't know about these guys. I mean, when when Golovkin won his first world title, he was fighting, you know, Nelson Julio Tapia and Lawan Simon to get his first couple of belts, and nobody knows who these guys are, you know. So it's like, how in the world is he able to get these major belts without, you know, necessarily fighting anybody? And then all of a sudden, y'all, people crown him as, you know, one of the best pound-for-pound guys in the sport and the best, you know, middleweight in the sport, but he hasn't really fought in any, you know, he hasn't really fought anybody. And that whole little, and this whole little ordeal about, you know, all these fighters don't want to fight him, I don't buy that. I necessarily don't buy that. So, especially when you mean to tell me that if there's nobody for him to fight at middleweight, you end up fighting a welterweight. That's inexcusable. You know, that's inexcusable. I mean, there's guys that, you know, want to go up and fight Canelo Alvarez, whether it's at middleweight or, you know, at junior middleweight. But, I mean, part of that is because of the business aspect, but the other part is because, you know, they want to fight the best in the division. I mean, you can't necessarily say that, you know, Austin Trout is somebody that would be a guy that's scared to fight a Gennady Golovkin if he was a middleweight. I just don't see that. So to me, I think there's a whole thing with Gennady Golovkin that guys like Abel Sanchez and Tom Loeffler pretty much protect him in comparison to other guys that are, you know, within the K2 promotion stable.
Yeah. There are people who are willing to fight him, but, you know, they do say that, you know, of the guys that they start, quotation marks, having negotiations with, you know, the money isn't, you know, for a risk or, you know, the level of the fight or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I kind of understand that because, I mean, here in this particular fight between Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin, the actual, you know, major guy was Kell Brook. Kell Brook was, you know, pretty much the person that was responsible for making this fight happen. I mean, you can't necessarily have, you know, Gennady Golovkin be the guy because the fight wasn't in New York City, it wasn't in L.A., and it wasn't in, you know, anywhere in, Kazakhstan or Russia or anything like that. They weren't able to pull off that particular type of fight there. So it had to be, you know, in the O2 Arena in England in order for that fight to be as successful as it was.
Yeah.
You know, so. All right, with that, we're stepping into overtime here. And, you know, with overtime, pretty much I'm going to talk about, you know, the upcoming fight that's next week that will be on HBO pay-per-view as the light middleweight title be on the line as Liam Smith defends his title against Saul Canelo Alvarez. That'll be in Jerry's World there in the Dallas area. So you have Saul Canelo Alvarez, of course, that only had that one particular loss against Floyd Mayweather, and had the win against Miguel Cotto recently and then beat Amir Khan, now goes back down to light middleweight to fight Liam Smith. Liam Smith is, you know, a guy that's from the UK and is trying to see if he could score a big win against Canelo Alvarez here. I mean, he's there at 23-0, but he only has 13 knockouts to his record. He's, you know, kind of a, you know, kind of like a boxer, not necessarily a boxer puncher, but a boxer. And he'll be defending this WBO title for the third time in his career. And looking at, you know, his resume, it doesn't look like a good resume at all. There's nobody that's, you know, really notable over the course of his career that he's fought and that he's beaten. So compared to the guys that Canelo has fought within the junior middleweight division, I see that this should be a pretty easy win for Canelo Alvarez, but we'll see how that goes about. But also, as a good undercarder co-feature, you have Gabe Rosado going up against Willie Monroe Jr. there in the middleweight division for one of those minor middleweight title belts. So I'll be paying attention to that. And also Saddam Ali coming back after his loss on March 5th to Jesse Vargas. He'll be coming back in a welterweight fight on this card as well. But just wanted to see Mike Grady, what you thinking about this particular card here that's going to be in Arlington?
Well, the main event is, I hadn't watched a lot of Liam Smith. The consensus of what I've seen is unimpressive. The co-main, or, you know, Rosado and Willie Monroe, that should be very interesting. I definitely think that, you know, Rosado, with his semi-slick style, you know, will offer it. It'll be an interesting looking fight. And then Willie Monroe, I guess, with his semi-slick style, it should be an interesting fight with those two.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say who is necessarily better, per se. So I guess that'll answer that question when they actually do fight, who's actually better. Off the top, I couldn't really say, like, which one I think is necessarily better.
Yeah.
But I think that says that helps the card, the appeal of the card, that fight. And, I mean, as long as Canelo get a knockout, you know, we can't really knock him. And he keeps having leverage against, other people, you know, that he's trying to fight. And he going to win, like, a junior middleweight title, right?
Yeah, it'll be for the WBO junior middleweight championship.
Okay, I mean, so he gained something. That's all that matters for this, that Canelo gained something out of this. And I'm sure he'll probably look good in doing it. And the more I see Canelo fight, I see him learn stuff. So that's what I appreciate about Canelo. Even though, you know, he does get gifts and, you know, his little, like, close wins are questionable at times, he fights people and you can definitely see different things, even though he hadn't fought the best of competition necessarily lately. Sort of. I mean, he could have went better with Amir Khan because that was like, you know, a mismatch, sort of.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that he shows something. Because when that punch that he landed on Amir Khan, it was like he did like a fake, you know. And I guess he's actually good for doing that. Like he does his punches, like he'll spring on you and then like unload his punches. And so against the wrong person, he won't land those punches and then he'll get frustrated, i.e. a Floyd Mayweather. But, you know, with somebody who loses concentration like Amir Khan, it was the right person to put in front of him.
Right. Yeah, and I think that thing with Canelo and Khan, yeah, like you were describing there, that he was able to get that particular punch in because it seemed like he was successful at first with the left hand and with the left jab and then coming in with the right hand. So what he tried to do was he tried to do a left to the body and then come back up with the right hand. And so with him fainting, going down with the left hand, he was able to get Amir Khan to drop his guard and send him up for that right hand, that right hook that basically just floored Khan and laid him out. And so, you know, while Canelo Alvarez has had a lot of fights in his career so far, it seems like he is, you know, learning on the fly with what he's doing here. So this one here will just be a showcase event for, for Canelo Alvarez. And it might be a test run to see what may happen next year if Canelo is able to go up to middleweight and fight Gennady Golovkin and make that a potential super fight. But it'll depend on the results of, you know, how many people in the UK ended up watching this fight between Golovkin and Kell Brook, and also the HBO numbers to see what they're able to do with that.
But one thing I can say about Canelo is that Canelo has taken fights where he wasn't necessarily favored to win. Like, people were – I don't know what the betting lines were for the Canelo-Mayweather fight. I'm sure Mayweather was favored. But, you know, there were some people like that Canelo has a chance because of his size and stuff. But, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we all kind of knew. But he wasn't – he shouldn't have been favored to win the Mayweather fight. And so – he's taking fights where he wasn't necessarily supposed to win. And even I think he'll take a Manny Pacquiao fight where he ain't necessarily supposed to win. Yeah, those guys are smaller than him, but they're still better per se than him. They still are more skillful than him. And so, you know,
right.
that's at least one thing you can give him credit for, is that he's facing guys that are better than him, so to say.
Right.
Even though he is bigger than them. That's not the case
right.
for Golovkin per se. You know, he ain't fought nobody where you don't know if he gonna win or not, or it's a, you know, a style where he gonna have such trouble with winning.
Yep, exactly. I mean, you know, at least Canelo has been in fights where, you know, either he's been the underdog or it's been a pick 'em fight. You can't say that about Gennady Golovkin. Yeah, you can't necessarily say that about Golovkin in that instance.
So who do you think is going to win the Rosado fight?
Man, that's a good one. I lean towards Monroe, but I wouldn't be surprised if Rosado ended up winning the fight, but I'm leaning towards Monroe.
Yeah. Because I think Rosado can get off some counters. And so Monroe showed us in GGG fight that, you know, you could possibly question his gonad. That's not the case for Rosado. Rosado going to fight until you knock him out. His,
right.
Rosado's power and Golovkin's power is definitely different, but I think if he get touched a few times, if he get countered a few times, and then Rosado throw off a few combos and hit him, I question whether or not he going to like be like, oh, let me fight through it and keep fighting through it. That's what I would question about him, and that would make me lean toward Rosado.
True. I would just think that, you know, Willie Monroe's, you know, skills would be able to, you know, frustrate Rosado long enough to have Willie Monroe score, you know, more of the 10-9 rounds and, you know, try to get the decision out of it, you know. So that's why that's how I was, like, leaning towards Willie Monroe. But like I said before, man, that's a pick-em fight, and that's why I like the fight, because it's a definite pick-em fight.
Yeah, but on paper, you're right. Monroe should win rounds. He should win rounds and you know, the worst-case scenario, win a decision. But the wild card is if Monroe has some glaring deficiency that, you know, that Rosado can take advantage of via countering and stuff, and then it'll be a sad day for Monroe.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I'm, like, you know, trying to see, like, who would be able to, you know, get the upper hand. And this one, you know, in between, you know, in the middle of the fight, I think if it gets to like rounds 4 through 6, then we'll see, you know, who will be able to pull off those rounds. Because by that time, I think we'll be seeing who will have basically the upper hand in that particular fight by round 6. So, but. Yeah, we'll pretty much wind this down here for this week. Next week, we'll get right back into it, to review this upcoming fight between Canelo Alvarez and Liam Bisping-Smith and the Willie Monroe Gabe Rosado fight. But be sure to catch the sister shows on the MRN Broadcasting Channel with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports on Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m., and the CMT Fire Show and Football Talk Show Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. on this channel. Like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good one.